Medicine Buddha, Verse of Praise and Mantra, also on page 34. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name, when merely heard, dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis life. Teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha teyata om bekanze bekanze maha bekanze bekanze raja samugate soha. Now the four measurables three times in your language, also on page 34. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment for friends or hatred for enemies. Now a couple of mantras. First, on page 37, first the one for Chen Rasik, Buddha of Great Compassion, Verse of Praise and Mantra. Not veiled by any fault, white in color, whose head a perfect Buddha crowns in light, gazing compassionately at all beings. To you, Chen Rasik, all sing on time posture. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 Well, the verse in praise for Green Tara, also on page 37. Tare liberates from psychic existence. Tutare liberates from the eight fears. Tare liberates from all sickness. I prostrate to the liberator, Mother Tara. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. ha, om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om tare tu tare tu re so. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. Om tare tu tare tu re so ha. We'll turn back to page 34, and Geshe-la will lead us in the Refuge and Bodhicitta prayer.
Sanje chodan soji chonam la chanchu pa tu dani kapsu chi bage chu jin je me sonam je
do la ten chu sanke tu pa sho
sanje chodan soji
chonam la chanchu pa tu dani kapsu chi
bage chu jin je me sonam je
do la ten chu sanke tu pa sho
Sanje
chodan soki chonam la chanchu ba tu dani kapsu chi
bage chu jin je be sanam je
do la ben chu sanke tu po sho
ala da la me be la me an je o mo do ja je la so chu je chung lo cha je ba no so je so la ro do shi shi na mo la ga da na je na ma na ne do a kun je pa ma je do ma je ke na na 刚才都在你说的,当我当中,当在军的政策,过当天了,这样子。Good morning. Good morning. This is for welcome to take a nap. Good morning. Good morning. Anybody watching on YouTube, good morning too. Yeah, Linda. Maybe begin with short meditations, maybe breathing meditations. If our mind is not settled, you know, like kind of like disturbed. So this is the technique for having hard time controlling your thought. So that also become obstacle to make your mind settle or calm or peace. So in that case, you breathe 21 times, and then focus on your breath. Exhale, inhale, one. Each time when you inhale, you count. Exhale, inhale, two. Exhale, inhale, three, like that. So you can do seven, so then take short break. Then do another seven, then take short break, and another seven. Usually, you do 21 times, okay? So we'll try to do this 21 times. And please, give yourself 100%. What that means, it means like be in that moment 100%. Physically, of course, you're here. So that's pretty much it. So now mentally, so it's kind of a challenge. So make sure that you are with your meditation mentally 100%. So that you get all the benefit. Okay. Exhale, inhale. You can just use your nose. Like that. Thank you. Next meditation is to go beyond appearances, trying to get closer to the realities, not just what it appears. So, in Buddhism, what is called ultimate truth, conventional truth, pretty much all the appearances that we our experience. Ultimate truth, that's not the ultimate truth. Ultimate truth is beyond conventional reality. So this technique or meditations are trying to help you to get closer to the reality, so not just caught up with conventional reality or appearances. There is something beyond. So that Thomas, you have like, you can read this. Don't think. Slowly, please. Slowly. So she's going to read, so then probably you meditate. Okay, you meditate.
Don't think about the thing that you are thinking about.
Maybe you can repeat it 3 times, please, 2 more times, then people can understand.
Don't think about the thing that you are thinking about. Don't think about the thing that you are thinking about. Don't think that you are not thinking about the thing that you are thinking about. Don't think that you are not thinking about the thing that you're thinking about. Don't think that you are not thinking about the thing that you are thinking about. Don't think about either one. Don't think about either one. Don't think about either one.
Oh yeah, so actually there's 4 lines. The last one, what is it? Teve tonye tombajus. Teve, therefore, they also you could say therefore, or that's the way to get closer to ultimate reality. That is the way to get closer to the ultimate reality. Oh, that's the way to connect yourself with ultimate reality. So, samcha, something you are thinking about. Samcha means object, refers to object. Something you are thinking about might be anything. Doesn't have to be something negative. Could be, you know, just cookies, or maybe thinking about lunch, you know, doesn't sancha. Sambar michas should not think, should not think about that. You know, it means like cookie. Because why? Because here we are trying to get closer to the ultimate reality, or trying to get connect ourselves with the ultimate reality. Therefore, thinking about cookie probably not just the best idea. So thinking about cookies, maybe that's not how you get closer to ultimate reality, by thinking cookies. So now samcha sambar meditations, when this almost could be like guided meditations. Don't think about the thing you are thinking about. How to do that? Yeah, so this is this word is saying something. This word is saying, don't think about the thing you are thinking about. How to do? Focus. Focus is needed. Focus is very much needed. I'm thinking about cookie, so this word sounds like saying that you should not think about cookie. Maybe I'm going to think about chocolate. But that's not how it's going to work. So here, trying to minimize your thought. So, the best thing, space, is the best thing to focus on. Best thing to focus on, space. And you could say space between thought. You understand? Space between thought, space. So there's really nothing to see. It doesn't have shape, color, just focus. It does require focus. Sambar michashings. Don't think about the thing you are thinking about. That requires focus. Focus on space. That helps. Once your attention closely placed on the space, then the next line, don't think about that you are not thinking about. That will probably not happen, because your focus is on the space. Only thing you are thinking, only thing that you are seeing is space. Only thing you are thinking about is space. Nothing else. Masambaya misamos. So then, don't think about neither one. Sounds much better in Tibetan, sorry to say, but you know, like, third line sounds much better in Tibetan. It sounds like more substance there. Samdham misam, samdham misam misamna, samdham misam misamna. So when you go to the third line, pretty much the fourth line, then you are connected to the ultimate realities. This is a technique to you to get closer to the ultimate realities, and maybe this is the way to go beyond conventional realities. Conventional realities require so many thought, so many different thought. Why? There are so many things. There are like shape, there are color, there are like sound, there are like smell, there's something to touch. All kinds of things involved. When it comes down to ultimate reality, none of them. So therefore, it doesn't require so much thought. Maybe that's the way to experience calm mind, peaceful mind. In order to experience calm mind, peaceful mind, you need less thought. Less thought. I just want to share. So, and according to the text, it says, Teve Tongyi Tongpa Jus. Teve Tongyi Tongpa Jus. So that's the way to experience ultimate reality or shunyata. I don't think shunyata is that easy to experience, but you are probably getting, you are on the right track to experience the ultimate reality. So, but there's a way to go, but not just that, probably experience the shunyata, then that's like a little bit too easy. In the text, it says, then you see ultimate realities. Should we take that literally, or maybe you are getting closer to seeing ultimate reality? Maybe it's like getting closer to see or experience ultimate realities. I probably not see. That is good to do, here and there, good to do this meditation. Just tell yourself, if you're having problem controlling your thought, just tell yourself, don't think. And you can copy, so that Donna said translated, so actual Tibetan text is free of copyright. All the Buddhist teaching, nobody's making money. All this wonderful book is copied, there's no copyright. Anybody can translate. Because the author has no interest for material things. So that's why all these wonderful, all these books, there's not close to 400 books, wonderful books, all free of copyright. Authors don't make even a penny. Yeah, I think time to time, if you're having a hard time controlling your thought, this is good meditation to do. Good meditation to do. If you've been carried out by, particularly if you carry out by disturbing thought, our life is not going to be good. So in order to overcome from disturbing thought, you need to focus. It requires some kind of focus or attention. Learn how to place all your attention, not just one attention, all your attention. So like creek. Many small creek that runs, each creek doesn't have power. If you manage to channel them all in one, it will generate power. Probably it will run better. Or it will probably have more power. So that means dividing your thought here and there and there. If you manage to place all the energy of the thought into one object, it's become like one creek. It has more power. If your power runs better, that's what you're trying to do. Okay, I just want to share.
You ready for a question?
I think so.
Okay. Okay, this one is, well, the student first asked for a brief explanation of the meditation of emptiness, mantra of pure emptiness. And also wants to know its relation to the Heart Sutra.
I think Dr. Brown fully qualified to talk. Dr. Brown, please. Yeah.
Okay. So first the student asks, is there a brief explanation of the meditation of emptiness mantra of pure emptiness? So the mantra of pure emptiness, I guess. And he says, Om Sabo, I don't know how to say it. Sabawa Sudha Sarva Dharma Sabawa Sudha Ham.
Yeah, pretty good. That's pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
Thank you. Yeah. I'll take it.
I think that's all you need to know.
And then the second part is, what's its relation to the Heart Sutra?
I think that's a great question for Geshe-la. I will say this though: a lot of the mantras, if you translate them, literally, like for example, Vajrasattva's mantra is quite long. And it makes sense. The mantra makes sense, but when you're saying it at 40 miles an hour. Like that. You're not thinking about the words. So you've already studied the mantra. You know what it means. It's a purification mantra. You have some faith that, you know, because your teachers have given you an empowerment or given you permission to do it and so forth, and you have some faith that it'll do some good, that it'll help purify, and usually a visualization that goes along with it. So you're not thinking about the literal meaning of the mantra. You're thinking about it as a purification mantra. I think, that shows up in many, many times in tantric sadhanas, you know, when you're supposed to meditate on emptiness. And I honestly don't know what the literal meaning is. I just know it means meditate on emptiness now.
Yeah, it means basically nothing. It means nothing.
Yeah. You know.
That's good. So Dr. Brown will probably continue. Om, if you wonder, you know, Om basically means body, speech, and mind. You know, when you go to yoga, do they also teach Om? Yeah, basically means there's three syllables together. You know, in Sanskrit, probably same thing. In Tibetan, but English, you don't never heard that. There's one letter, top of that, there's another letter, there's top of that, there's another letter. There are three stacked syllables. Or, probably there's a middle one, there's a main character, symbolize your body. Because we have a lot of problems thinking negative about our bodies, don't we? Yeah, we have to admit, you know, there's nothing to be shameful. Admit in order to get better. The middle one, many syllables, they symbolize body. So this three syllables together then become Om. Just become Om. That's how it sounds when you say it, Om. And the same in Hindi language, that also they say Om. In yoga, they say Om. I've never been to yoga class. Do they say Om?
Yes.
Yeah, Om. So then goes below, symbolize speech. Yeah, so we also have a lot of problems with that too. You know? Then there's like small tiny circle on top of that main character. That's called Ma. A, U, Ma. The small circle is called Ma, symbolize your thought, your mind, your thought, that you are thinking your thought. That's what is happening. Om, you're basically saying my body, spirit, mind. What you're hoping that become pure. Om, that's Om. Many characters are, then there's similar like there's similar something similar. I don't know how to explain, but that need. Can you? Did you see it later on?
Yeah, let me find it.
Underneath there should be something small called similar like triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Small triangle. Underneath the main character, so that symbolizes your speech.
Yes.
So then top of that, there's a small circle, tiny circle, that symbolizes your thought. So when you say Om, you are basically visualizing or imagining, you put deep down from your heart. There's no difference between my body, speech, and mind, and the body, speech, and mind, whom I have faith. Could be anything, could be Buddha, could be Tara, could be anything. And you are just seeing like there's no difference, the same thing. What's about all this thought that is associated with that each of them? There's could be delusions, could be just your ideas. There's no foundation to support that. It's just your idea. Of course, we have tons of ideas. why you are not pure, why you are so bad, why you are not worthy. We have tons of ideas. That's just your idea. So there's Om Sambhava. So the mantra that just Linda just said, Sambhava means nature, is a Sanskrit word, nature. Tibetan is called Rangshi, it's nature. Now, Om Sambhava, what are you saying? Nature of my body, speech, mind. That's what you're saying, Om Sambhava. You're simply saying nature of my body, speech, mind. Shuddha, pure. Shuddha means pure. What are you trying to achieve? Oh, I have so many negativities. I don't like things that I say. I don't like things that I do. I don't like the things that I think about. There's many things. So none of them helps. None of them helps. Basically, I just bring you down. All the feelings down, probably eating something, make you more down, no benefit at all. So instead, there's alternative. So remember, Dr. Brown, you taught me how to say downtown probably like 20 years ago. I say downtown, nobody understand. Dr. Brown said, no, Gisela, you say downtown. So that's how you say. How you say alternative?
Alternative.
Just say Om Sambhava Shuddha. Nature of my body, spirit, mind is pure. That's what it means. Nature of my body, spirit, mind is not what you think. It's not what you think. It's pure. Om Sambhava Shuddha. Nature of my body, spirit, mind is pure. So now that's been taken care of. So now when I look at other, oh, this problem, I don't like the way that person talk, the way that person looks, what that person believe. Now we have all kind of ideas, unfortunately. Oh, this is not my tribe of people, all kind of ideas. It's not good. Any negativity is not good for your life. If you are seeking good life, happier life, all of this is not good. Whether they're associated with the religion, religious, culture, tradition, race, any of them is not doing any good for you if you have negative thought about it. It's not serving you well. It's like destroying your peace of mind, that's all. So now my body has been, I've been taking care of that, so I have all these opinions, negative opinions now. Turns out that's not correct. What is correct? Om Sambhava Shuddha. Pure, that's correct. I should focus on that, correct. It will lead you somewhere, better place. So now Sarva, then after that, Om Sambhava Shuddha, Sarva, everything. Everything that I just mentioned, everything. All the phenomena, environment, people, idea, opinions, race, culture, religious belief, all of them include. Oh, I have like a lot of problems. You have to admit, you can just pretend if you are having a lot of problems. Sarva Dhamma, Sambhava, nature of all of that. Not just my body, spirit, mind. That's been taken care of now pretty well. So now everything else, nature, everything else. What I see, Shuddha. Pure, just pure. Shuddha. Of course, that requires more than mere faith. They require concrete reason. Om Sambhava Shuddha, Sava Dharma, everything Shuddha, pure. Hum. Now you are meditating. Hum. That is me. Pure nature of my body, speaking mind, pure nature, everything. What is that? That's me. That is the essence of my practice. And that is me. That is the essence of my yoga. Yoga doesn't mean a physical movement, that simply means practice. So that's the essence of my practice, or you could say in Sanskrit, my yoga. So you are thinking, that's me. That will help you to become better. That's where our focus should be, rather than, you know, something negative. Nobody gets benefit. Nobody gets benefit. You are having negative opinion with somebody else. The moment that person notices that, that person is not happy. If that person is not happy, how you can be happy? It's impossible. Impossible. Your happiness is very much dependent on other beings, believe or not. That's the fact. The moment you make someone unhappy, someone feel bad, it makes you feel bad too. Well, that's not win-win situation. So this one is win-win situations. You are thinking that your essence of pure nature, pure, your body, spirit, mind, pure, everything else pure, you get immense benefit having that thought. Or maybe that thought will lead you into shunyata, maybe slowly, not right away. So just want to explain that the mantra. So now, Dr. Brown, please continue about shunyata.
I don't think I'm prepared.
I think you are prepared.
Well, what do you want? What do you want to talk about?
By the way, Dr. Brown is the ex-director of the Kadamba Center since from the beginning this time, I think. So Dr. Brown and Dr. Roby, they are the one who found this center 90?
In the early 90s.
Early 90s, and during those hippies time. Not hippies time, maybe a little later. But I think Dr. Brown has been around with the hippies in Asia. I think hippies from all over the world, they get together in Nepal, India. I think Dr. Brown is there at that time. But Dr. Brown says he is one of the cleanest pure shape or beard, not like a beard.
Cleanest?
Yeah, usually hippies. When I was in the monastery, like...
I was clean cut.
When I was in the monastery, 9, 10, 11 years old, hippie comes to my monastery. Long hair, long beard with a guitar, you know, like, looks kind of like half drunk, half not really drunk, kind of like very peaceful. You can feel the energy. There's no harmful energy. They're just being themselves and just enjoying their life. So I encountered many hippies when I was in monastery, but I'm not one of those. But there are many of them there. Because I thought they are peaceful. They are peaceful people. Sorry to interrupt.
Well, I will say, when I went to the Copan course in 78, George Chernoff, I met him there, and he came up to me and said, "What are you doing here?" Like, you know, like, I was such an outlier. Because there were 200 people, and most everybody was a hippie. And I did shave every day, so I guess that made me different. But yeah. So I think, a word that I don't hear very often is gacha. Gacha.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, when you talk about emptiness, if we don't understand that, then we don't know what we're empty of, which
very
is
true.
Gacha.
Very true, yeah.
So there's this I don't know what the word we use for it is inherent existence, independent existence, true existence, whatever.
Yeah, if the gacha become too big, so then you fall into nihilism.
Yeah.
Nihilism. If it's too small, so then you fall into another view, extreme view, what is called middle way, free from two extreme view. One extreme view, then you say, oh, nothing exists. That's too extreme. Another one is everything super exaggerated. So then you are not in the middle. So the shunyata means middle way, not free from true extreme view. So the gagcha, of course, you know, if you don't understand what is gagcha, so then it's hard to understand what is shunyata. So if the gagcha become too big, nihilism, it become too small, then you are still in super exaggeration state. You are not in the middle. Dr. Brown, you please continue to talk, so then I will, if I can contribute a little bit here, there, so then I will.
Okay. Well, we talk, for example, you know, everybody, I remember John Landau, who one of the Westerners that taught Buddhism early on, when we used to meditate on emptiness, he'd say, okay, a quick way to get there is just to think, okay, you're sitting here, you think, my body's sitting, my mind is thinking, where is the I? I'm sitting here and I'm meditating, I'm thinking, where's the I? And you know, you start to look for that I that seems to be surreal and inherently existent, permanent, immutable, truly existent. That's gacha. And when we look for it, we see it's just a nominal eye. It's just an eye that's posited in dependence upon a mind and body. There's not an independent eye. There's a dependent eye. And it's a completely opposite. So, you know, obviously the take-home message is that the way we think we exist and the way we truly exist, completely opposite. The way we look at things out there and phenomena, whether it be coming in and through any of the sensory doors, but the one that's most powerful is visual. Everything seems to exist out there, and we think, oh, well, that everybody would see Geshe-la just like I see Geshe-la, but no, everybody's having their own experience. There's no inherently existent Geshe-la who exists independent of my mind projecting it. So Geshe-la exists in dependence upon causes and conditions, parts, body and mind, collection, five aggregates, and a mind that labels Geshe-la. He doesn't exist out there, but it looks like he's, you know, like he's coming at us. But we're literally creating Geshe-la as our karma ripens and forces us to see him a certain way, and he exists completely, and he doesn't exist independently. He exists dependently, which is completely the opposite of the way we perceive him.
So let me interrupt one moment, please. So what are we trying to get out of this?
Well, we don't, you know, all of our problems.
Yeah, you are also welcome to ask questions, because I'm asking on your behalf.
Yeah.
What are we trying to get out of this?
For example, the falsely projected I, the falsely projected I is, we project a false sense of I and we grasp onto it. And it's, you know, so-called I grasping ignorance. Well, all of our problems come from that.
Huh.
All the suffering and samsara. Well, somebody offends me, I get angry. I feel offended. If I see something desirable, I want it. If I see something that I don't know, you know, that's sort of neutral, I ignore it. Or So, you know, all of our suffering, sort of the tap root for all the suffering and samsara is self-grasping ignorance. It's this projecting false sense of self, clinging to it, and believing that's who I am. And then all of our decisions come out of that.
So you are saying
all
that,
of our interpretations
that cause all the problems.
All the problems, yeah.
That cause all the problems.
All the problems in samsara. That's why you know, the wisdom of emptiness, it sees that's a fallacy, that's a fiction, freezes. That's called nirvana.
So you say that caused all the problems.
He's debating me now.
No.
Uh-oh. I'm going to give it to Worth.
Buddhists are stubborn. Buddhists are very stubborn. So Buddha said, don't believe somebody says so. We have to debate.
Yeah.
So see what how far that person can defend.
Yeah.
So you are saying that grasping that inherent self cause all kind of problems. Is that correct?
Exactly.
So now, like, what you should do, if somebody criticizes you, how you can use knowledge of emptiness or shunyata to not react? How?
Good question, Geshe-la.
Yeah. I've been debating in the monastery 30 years. I've been debating.
Yeah.
Not easy to defeat.
Yeah, I mean, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, but we, Mark Epstein, who's Buddhist, he's a psychiatrist, but he's been practicing Buddhism, written a bunch of books and stuff. And he tells his clients, who may not even be Buddhist, but he just says, whenever you have a strong emotion or somebody accuses you of something or you get angry or whatever, immediately stop and say, where's the I? Who's this I that's so upset? That's kind of a good place to start. Is to ask, you know, who is the I?
If somebody's chasing you, you pause or you run or meditate on emptiness.
Say it again.
Somebody's chasing you with a stick.
Yeah.
Big stick. You pause and meditate on emptiness or you run.
I think you can do both.
Sorry, that's not good. Sorry.
No, I think it's a great question. I'd be curious to see what other people say, but this, you know, I mean, understanding
in the moment
when your spouse or your boss is in your face yelling at you, you know, how can our understanding of emptiness rescue us
in
that moment? How can we be, you know, now one of the things that this is something that I'm not able to do very often, but every now and then when I get lucky, I can remember that things that my perception is completely diluted, that it's basically forced on me by my karma. There's no inherently existent, angry, mean, yelling person out there that exists independent of my mind interpreting it. It's my projection. And if I yell back and react, I'm just creating another round of suffering for myself. I'm creating the causes for somebody else to yell at me. So I just go, okay, you know, this is my karma ripening, and just relax, not react. And that's something that, you know, seeing that these projections are forced on me by my past karma based on my past behaviors, don't exist inherently, independent of my mind, gives a little bit of space to not get angry, sometimes.
Very good. That's a wonderful answer. What do you say? So now, what kind of things require to in order to get into that kind of it's very quick, like somebody yelling at you in front of your face. I think it's not that easy to meditate. That's not easy to just pause and where's I? It's not that easy to do. So how you can prepare yourself to reach that level?
Yeah.
If somebody's screaming at you, somebody's making negative comment on the way you look, not easy to just pause and like, oh, or what is I, where I, like, so how you get there?
You're asking me again?
Yeah. So now this is not going to finish till 11:30.
Well, I can tell you, you know, I think, here's one way to get there. I think this is hard to, this is the, a fairly advanced way to get there, but is to meditate on emptiness. To be, you know, to sort of, for example, sit down and, you know, meditate on the emptiness of yourself and of other phenomena. So when you start looking for the inherently existent I or the inherently existent other object, you find nothing. When you look for it and you cannot find gotcha, when you can't find that inherently existent object, what you're left with is you don't find it. You don't find it. You're left with it's absent. You know, that inherently existent self or other is absent. It's empty. And so, you know, it's called space-like meditative equipoise on emptiness, where you, what appears to the mind is space, and what you're aware of is that nothing exists inherently. The mind is simultaneously, it has its experience of spaciousness, but is aware of emptiness. And then when you get up from that meditation, if it's done well, you begin to see everything as if it's a dream, not seeing things as being so real and solid and inherently existent, but having a little bit softer, view of the world. So when somebody comes up and yells at you in a dream, you know, get upset. It's just a dream. So that's obviously, you've got to be pretty advanced to do that.
Can you say it again? Somebody comes in your dream?
Pardon?
Somebody comes into your dream, yell at you?
Oh, all the time.
Then you don't get upset?
No.
No, you do get upset. Yeah, you do get upset.
Well, maybe I do. I don't remember many of them.
No, I volunteer. I do. So now what does that indicate?
You got some work to do.
Yeah, I do a lot of work.
If I'm aware that it's a dream, then it's just a dream.
Yeah, if you are aware when you're dreaming that you're dreaming, that helps.
Yeah,
definitely.
Then there's
the
no
problem
reacting.
Is when you're dreaming, you don't recognize that you're dreaming.
Yeah.
So in underline, are you saying that we are dreaming?
It's as if we're dreaming.
Like life.
Like a dream. But it's not, it's real, but it's like a dream at the same time.
So now, one more question. Now time has already ran out. One more question. So how you get there? How you analyze? How you get, like, what kind of meditation you do in order to reach that state? Like, oh, now there is no absolute I or no self or inherent self. How you get there? Like space, like meditations. How you get there?
I mean, it depends. They're different. I mean, they're different visuals. I mean, in Tantra, there's a whole different way of doing it, visualizing things a certain way. But you know, I mean, we talked about this too. The Dalai Lama said if the Buddha had a slogan, it would be dependent arising, that everything arises and comes into existence in dependence upon causes and conditions, parts, and a consciousness that designates it. Those are the three aspects of interdependence or so-called dependent arising. And we think, well, that's not that big a deal. It's not hard to see that things depend upon causes and parts and a consciousness that labels them. But that is exactly the opposite of the way we see the world. Mm-hmm. We see the world as if it was inherently existent, independently existent out there. Everybody would see this microphone the same way a dog, a cat, you know, another person would see it. Somebody who'd never seen a microphone would have no idea what this is. You know, everybody has different perception. So I don't know what I'm saying now, but anyway. Yeah. So think that there is, you know, when we do the analysis using dependent arising, we see that that object that we hold is so as being real and inherently existent, like Geshe-la. When we look and try to find him, we can't find that Geshe-la. All we can find is a Geshe-la that depends upon causes and conditions, parts, and a consciousness that labels him. So he merely exists. He lives, exists in dependence upon body and mind. A label, merely labeled, as Lama Zopa says. We're all merely labeled.
Yeah, very good, yeah.
So I think that you've taught us that the way to do that is by the four-point analysis. Mm-hmm. So to understand the emptiness of all phenomena is to meditate on the emptiness of self. So the first one was determining that the object of negation, the truly existent self, must be clearly identified, determining the full set of possibilities and their pervasion, determining that the object of negation, the truly existent self, must be either one with the aggregates or separate from the aggregates. So that's the meditation on how to on the emptiness of self.
Very good. So that is the four-point analysis. That's the how it's been meditated on emptiness in the past, produced great result. So that four-point analysis needs to be learned. Four-point analysis. So, yeah.
Yeah, I just want to say, after the last week, I spoke briefly to Geshe-la, and he asked me to say something, so I will, because we had a conversation about faith. Remember? And
last week
we were talking about faith, and the Dalai Lama, when he's given teachings, you know, he says there's so much in Buddhism, like karma. We can't prove it. Past lives, future lives, our potential for enlightenment, the different realms of samsara, the power, you know, do mantras work? Does the path work? You know, we have to, you know, we have to take a lot of this on faith. And he said that for Westerners, because we're so analytical and so, you know, we doubt everything. So faith is hard for us to come by. And he said that if you meditate on emptiness, I mean, not meditate, but if you study emptiness and understand it correctly, you realize it's irrefutable. It's obvious that things appear to exist inherently and don't exist that way. And so once you gain some conviction in the validity of the teachings on emptiness, the wisdom of emptiness, and some confidence in that, then you open up a little bit to, okay, well, maybe karma is true. I'll creatively align with karma and rebirth and, you know, past and future lifetimes and things that are, and my potential to get enlightened. I'm going to go with that for a while, because these teachings on emptiness are obviously clearly, you cannot refute it. They're so clear. And so that was his point, is that if we understand emptiness, that opens up the whole world of possibility to deepen our faith in the Dharma.
Yeah, very good. Well said, well said. Yeah. So that quantum physics?
Physics.
Quantum physics is same idea about Shunyata, emptiness? Huh? Not really? Huh? Yeah, so now the downside of the quantum physics is that there's risk you may fall into nihilism. So that's not good. We are here talking about middle way, freedom from two extreme view. Don't super exaggerate, cause so much problems. Or don't say there's nothing that also cause problems. Just get into the middle. So that's called another way to call emptiness or middle way, same thing, means same thing. Freedom from two extreme view. So the way to meditate, just Hamula mentioned, 4-point analysis. Why I emphasize on that? Because that is the meditation has been used, tested, used, produce good result. No, we are not going to experience emptiness just by talking. You know, so emptiness is very hard to understand. Concept of emptiness is not easy to understand, but quite relatively easy to meditate. Compassion, love, kindness, easy to understand. Practically hard to, quite challenging to practice. Emptiness, hard to understand, but relatively easy to meditate on emptiness. So, yeah, a lot of benefit. Definitely, if you have better understanding of emptiness, that will, as Dr. Brown said, it will open up possibility for karma, all of that. So, and here in America, you also say what goes around comes around. Is that karma or what is that? Huh? When it's come down to making money, people have not hard time to using word karma. There's a karma soap, karma bean, karma quitty, karoka. They have no problem doing it. You can make some money. So I was just wondering, what goes around comes around. Is that karma? When American people say what they mean, what they indicate, why you say that? Why you say what goes down comes down, like trying to teach you something, or is it just what is meaning? Just wondering. What's the meaning? What goes down comes down. Dr. Brown, you understand what I'm saying? Oh
yeah. It goes back to a biblical phrase of you will reap what you sow. So whatever you put out there, you're going to get it back. Just remember that.
Is it meaning what you put out?
Yeah. Whatever you give is going to get back. You get payment for that.
So then why we are having, why we are not giving? Yes.
So I think in this culture, people say that all the time. What goes around comes around, you know. So if you don't brush your teeth, you get cavities. You know, if you don't go to work, you won't have food and money to spend. But Buddhism, it's much bigger than that. It's like everything goes around. Every moment of every day, we're creating, you know, 60 karmas in a finger snap. Seeds are being planted that will ripen in the future, and it'll create our whole world, our experience, who we are, whether we're an animal or a human, and all of that is karma. Is much bigger than just, you know, a pedestrian attitude that most people have in this country. They don't understand the Buddhist perspective is our whole world is created by karma and not just some things. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes complete sense. So now one more question, maybe I'll let you go. One more question. Does this concept help? Does this concept encourage us or discourage us? What you just said.
But what goes around comes around?
Yeah, the bigger, like you say, from a Buddhist point of view, every single moment.
I think
idea about karma, whole like teachings about karma.
Yeah.
Is this like encouraging or discouraging or like?
I think it's very, it's nice to know how things work. In other words, The Buddha, I mean, again, we can't prove it until we enlighten ourselves, supposedly. But it's nice to know how the world works, you know, that positive actions lead to happiness and selfish, self-centered negative actions lead to suffering. And karma is expandable. Tiniest kindness or even little negativities can have huge impact. And that, you know, we can't experience a result. Everything we have is the result of past karma, and we can actually create our future by the choices we make now. So we cannot experience a result without creating the cause, and then karma is never lost. So that's encouraging. We can destroy it by anger and purification, so we're encouraged to purify. So I think understanding that that's how the world works from the Buddhist view, I think it's very encouraging.
Oh,
because now you know, now we can stop making the mistakes that are causing us miserable and start creating the causes for, you know.
Not just based on mere faith, not based on concrete reason.
Yeah, based on reasoning. There's an element of faith to it, but it's based on reasoning, yes.
Oh, that's good. Solely based on concrete reason why I should not say harsh word. It's not just for religious belief.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
Oh, that's very good. So now, when things go wrong, teaching of karma, that helps or not helps? When things go wrong in our life.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
As I think most of you know, I lost my son, a 20-year-old, a year ago. And my spiritual practice and the little that I do understand of Buddhism has helped immensely. Following what Dr. Brown is saying is, you know, it is encouraging that now as I move forward, hopefully I can propagate merit and better karma for, myself in the future, or my consciousness in the future. So it is encouraging that we do have the opportunity to do better, I guess, and have an understanding of why bad things happen. We're in samsara and, anyway, that's what I want to say.
Wonderful, very good. Yeah, I was just wondering, like, especially when things going wrong one after another, does teaching of karma will help? So you know, supposed to help. That's what the teaching is there. So I was just wondering, you know, like in Asia, especially particularly in Tibet, you know, we don't have problems thinking about karma when things are falling apart. So I was just wondering in the West, you know, even though I've been here now 22 years, still I cannot say I understand Western people's mentality. I cannot say. Just wondering, like, how you're going to use the teaching of karma. The Linda said it very well, yeah. So Linda did lose her son. I was there, so more than years ago. There's no huge loss, so... So then I'll be happy if the karma of teaching helps when things going wrong in their life, one or another, if their teaching of karma liberated them, freed them from that, so then wonderful. You know, like, just wondering. Yeah, Rabbi, you want to say something?
Well, just one last thing is that the Tibetans in Tibet and most of the lay people, particularly the ones that live in the villages hundreds of miles from Lhasa, even they have some understanding of karma and importantly, how to purify it. And so Geshe-la can corroborate this. There are people in Tibet that will start hundreds of miles from Lhasa and they will prostrate. I mean, they want to purify their negative karma. And they know that you have to have, we talk about the 400 powers, but part of it's that, you know, some action, and prostration is one of those actions. They'll prostrate all the way to Lhasa. They'll prostrate, get up where their hands are, do another prostration, 300 miles. You're talking about faith. Wow.
Tibetan people do
that's
have
a whole nother level.
Yeah, so I'm not sure how much they understand about karma, but they believe in karma. But I'm not sure how much they understand how many different kinds of karma, probably very little, but their faith is really strong. So that's why they prostrate from Eastern Tibet all the way to Lhasa, the capital of Tibet, where there's a lot of holy objects. So they want to come there to see this particular holy object. So they cover every ground. Is the water? No. They cover. It's not that they skip. Every single inch of the dirt, all the way to the house, they cover everything. Doesn't mean it's snowing. Yeah, they do. So I think the group of Western tourists, when they're winter time, they're all like freezing, wearing this like expensive, like North Face jacket, all of that. All of a sudden, not very far, they see the stream coming up. Turns out there are people are doing like prostrations. Those people not freezing, steam coming out of them. No fancy jackets. Steam coming out of their like body. Yeah, that's true. So they still do, you know, so like so that's why last week we talked about, as I asked questions, in order to have like how is make this life easier. This life itself is already complicated, so you cannot deny this fact, no? So that's is good to have faith that helps you to do something good or not. That I throw many questions there. So yeah. So now time is way over, so thank you very much, Dr. Brown. So please continue to come Sunday class. We can have debate. People can listen. Yeah.
Okay, so let's see.
I think this is good discussions, don't you think? Yeah.
Okay.
Next time, please, everybody participate, so there's no limit.
Please turn to page 246 in the Gold Prayer Book, and we'll read the dedication verse from Master Shanti Deva, Bodhikarya Bhattara. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of our merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with the mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may these never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, dispel the miseries of the world. Okay, now go to page 244 and we'll read the long life prayer for His Holiness. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. And on page 245, the long life prayer for Khyentse Rinpoche Jitsen Losan Dalup. The one who masters his speech at a very young age. The one with great patience received the name Avatara. The one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsokapa and Bliss and Void. Lama, ornament of the Aloha tradition. Please remain until samsara ends. And on page 244, the one for Lama Zompa Rinpoche, you uphold the doer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Manjha Gnostic Taurus doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayers honoring the three jewels, savor myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then seven green tar mantras for Geshe Gelug and Geshe Sangpa. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re Soha.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. I have a quick announcement. This coming Wednesday evening, we're going to have a very special event here. We're doing a Guru Puja practice. This is just a prayer service. This is to benefit Geshe Sangpo's mother, who died a year ago. And Geshe-la has invited anybody who wishes to come and join in this, especially if you have had a loss of somebody that you love, a family member or a friend or even a family animal. You can come. You don't need to follow along with the puja if you want to just sit and think about the person that you're caring for who has recently died. That would be wonderful. There will also be a light dinner afterward that Geshe Sangpo and his brothers are sponsoring to offer to all of us who come. So please do think about coming. It's going to be at 6:30 Wednesday evening. We're going to stream it on, it's going to be here, so please come if you can. We'll also stream it on YouTube if you can't come, but it's nice to have lots of people here. And just a favor to ask of anyone who's here today, if you can, we're going to rearrange the seating for that. So if you can stay for a couple minutes and help with that, that would be wonderful. Thank you very much.
Yeah, if you're wondering what the dinner is going to be bread and potato. The light dinner. Oh, yeah. Would you mind to take a moment to introduce each other yourself, please? No? Oh, yes. Can you call the... Hello, Jen. Hello, Tara. Hello, Karma. Hello, Pati Pandiji. Hello, William, Peter, Bob, Italy, Jessica, Hen, Emily. Hello, Michael, Chitramatra, Laura. Marja, Alina, Marcelo, Fernanda, Patagonia, all the people on YouTube.